on the activities of the past year and a few comments on the year ahead. I'm going to do that exceptionally briefly in about 15 minutes. And then after that, we're going to show you the first production run of this year's Snapshot 94 video. Essentially, that puts together in a capsule. I know what the Greek word for that is. capsulizes, encapsulates much of the some of the material we would have covered, but we also wanted to give you an opportunity to see the interviews we did this year and the thrust of the message, so that when we dub it off next week or so and send it out, you'll be able to build some comments around it for presentation to the churches throughout the region. So I'd just like to make a few comments then about some of the events of the past year. A few weeks ago we had what I consider one of the finest SEPs we've ever had here. One of the opportunities we had this year was to bring over some people from New Zealand. And all I can say was that it was a success far beyond what we could have anticipated. The New Zealand youth went back saying that it was one of the most delightful times they'd had. They have so many friends here now, and they have sent their friends home to try and get their parents to go to New Zealand for the feast. So it's accomplished, as far as I'm concerned, far more than we could possibly have hoped. We will have an SEP in New Zealand this coming December. It will run the first 2 weeks of the Australian camp, and the 2 weeks of the New Zealand camp will run together. We also had this last year, for the very first time, an SEP in Fiji for all the Pacific, and we brought in young people from Papua New Guinea, the Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, Tonga, as well as the people in Fiji, and that went exceptionally well. They had some unique experiences, which you probably read about, with the death of the president of Fiji falling during the camp, and with Ratua Pelikanaimoe's connections there, our young people at camp had some experiences that you couldn't possibly have dreamt about in a lifetime. Also, in the last few weeks, it's been quite exciting. We put deposit on land in Colombo, on which to build a hall and an office, small office facility. Because the foundation project closes at the end of 94, we'll no longer need the fairly large house we're now using, which includes dormitory space for the teachers at Neuralia when they come down to Colombo. And secondly, the church has outgrown really the living room area that we're using for services there. So that's a nice step. The land is in a very nice residential area, and it'll fit in very well. And I think if we build a hall there as well, we have the potential there to reach out and make a facility available to the community in a way we would not have been able to do if it was somewhere else. At the same time, you're aware, of course, through my rather disastrous CC mail message of a couple of weeks ago, I have to explain this, technically disastrous, about the purchase of the office in New Zealand. And we discovered, should explain there, that a line of pluses across the bottom of a CC mail message is a electronic signal for the modem to turn off. So I sent out a 9,000-byte message to all the ministers, in the region, with the exception of those in New Zealand who had a slightly different message, and every time someone tried to dial in and pick it up, the modem cut out. So I had to ask fellas in the office to go in Friday night and individually go into all your boxes and kill that message and take the line pluses out and resend it. So I've learned something. So if you're... By the way, since that time, I've had one minister send me a message with a line of pluses across it, and the same thing happened. So please don't use lines of pluses in the middle of messages. Earlier in the year, we had registration in Singapore denied. We've applied once before. We changed this time. We waited a long time and hoped they didn't remember us, and applied from a different perspective, but they're very thorough in Singapore, and that was denied again. And the legal office in Pasadena is preparing an appeal to that. Personally speaking, I don't hold out much hope of an appeal in Singapore. I think once they've made their decision, they will stick to it no matter what. That's my personal opinion. I'll be very surprised if we have if the appeal actually turns over that decision. But we can always pray and hope that miracles occur even in Singapore. We are pursuing registration of the church in Vanuatu and the Solomon Islands as quickly as we possibly can, and we'll be pursuing it this year in Papua New Guinea. New Guinea has been a fantastic success story in terms of growth. Tim Grawl just came back from New Guinea a few weeks ago. We baptized, I think, another 5 people, which takes the membership up to 36. When it was only a few years ago, we only had 6 members there at all. So it's been a fantastic growth rate there. I'd like to make a couple of comments from the report he sent me, because it's quite exciting. He gives me a little outline of some of the members, the newer members there that he baptized. One man said that one of the men he baptized, his first encounter with Christianity came through 2 missionaries who challenged him to find a fellowship of the brethren who would live the way of Christ with integrity. So 2 other missionaries challenged him, and then he ended up finding the church. Another young man came into contact with the church through his stepmother, who in turn was a friend of a person who once knew a church member. Another lady was baptized who learned of the church through a work associate who once had contact with a church member. And these are long-time contacts, many, many years ago, that are bearing fruits now in places like Lae and Wewak and Nuku and other such places. Tim says in this report, one family we visited in Madang came along to meet us through unusual circumstances. Their neighbor, a man whom we'd visited several times over the last few years, works as a customs agent. He noticed that cassette tapes were being sent to an address in Madang from our Burley head's office. After learning that the person receiving the tapes was a baptized member, he requested to listen to the tapes. As he listened to the minister's, to the members' tapes, his neighbors, the family that came to see us, they overheard the tapes that he was listening to. So they requested a subscription to The Plain Truth. And this family came to see Tim when he was there. So we now have about 7 people interested in the church in Madang. He says here, and this is, I'll just read this as it is, the church in Papua New Guinea continues to grow and can be expected to experience further growth in the near future. The level of Plain Truth readership is extensive and may be hinted at by a letter to the editor in their national newspaper, the Post Courier. In the letter, the writer discusses the state of the Papua New Guinea national government, drawing upon lessons learned from the training of young horses. The material is obviously drawn from a recent Plain Truth article by Lynn Marshall, entitled Forward and Straight. Many people are familiar with the magazine, but as the membership increases, many are now becoming aware of the church behind the magazine. So, interesting comments from Papua New Guinea. The big question is there now, how do you handle growth in New Guinea when it's a difficult and dangerous country and people there are very poor? Well, we've got some ideas and working on that, but it's a great challenge for the future. And we've also seen the membership in the Solomon Islands start growing again as well. And another one, go to Myanmar, Burma. In the north of Burma, as soon as we ordained a local church elder up there, there was suddenly a group of baptisms up there as well. So that was an interesting move. Sorle Bay, who is, to my knowledge, the only employed minister in the region who's not able to be here because of, obviously, the restrictions on his travel, he's getting on in years and his health is not very good. And I do fear for, you know, his health in the long term. But one of the things we'd like to do while you're here is we've produced a card for him. I'd like to ask if you wouldn't mind signing the card. I think it'd be nice if we sent it to him, since he's the only full-time man not here. And I'll leave it over on the table. If you wouldn't mind just signing your name at some point in the next couple of days and signing your name off on the list on the front. So it's, things are going quite well there. Just for information's sake, right in the far north of Burma as well, we've come across a group of Sabbath-keeping churches that use our literature. And we were in contact with a man up there who apparently pastors this little group of churches who we have never met. He uses all our literature, seems to model his churches on what he knows of us. He's constantly asking us for basically financial help, which is actually out of the question, not able to do that. It's one of those areas where no one can go to. It's forbidden. Westerners are forbidden to travel there. So we hope at some point in time we might make contact with him as he is able to cross the border into northeastern India, and perhaps one of these occasions he'll be able to meet up with Danny Zachariah on his annual trip to that particular area. So you find these little groups up there, didn't even know existed, and he uses his letterhead, it's modelled on ours basically. His name is an unusual name, Mr. Lazam Brang. And it's interesting, I don't know how, we don't know the history of how he came to be in that area. We also have excellent growth in Indonesia. The membership in Indonesia doubled last year in one visit from Mr. Yong Chin Ji. It went from 6 to 12. And that's another challenge. There's a country of 140 million people, I think, or 160 million people. And things are starting to move there as well. So it looks like one of our biggest, challenges in the next few months and years is going to be how to serve these people as adequately as we really need to. Oh, by the way, we've come in contact with, and I don't know if Joe knows this, we've come in contact with the Church of God Seventh Day in Hyderabad, and they have been to our services and had made contact with Danny Zachariah, and the last time I was in Hyderabad, three of their people came to the Bible study I conducted, and we talked to them for a while afterwards. So that was very interesting as well. On the financial side, I think you're aware, I think I mentioned in a message that we had an outstanding January. The income in Australia was up 27%, which we attribute directly to Mr. Dikarcher's letter. The income took a nice upturn in New Zealand as well, going from minus 9 to 0. But that's after the economic situation they've had in the last year or so. That was a very good, that's a good increase too. So we're pleased with with that. It's a good start to the year. Certainly don't expect it to stay at that level. However, that's, an excellent start to the year. Australia, we finished the year last year with an income that was approximately 6% below the previous year. The net membership in Australia, to counter the rumours that put out by all these other groups that the church is wasting away and soon you'll be the only one left. The net membership in Australia went up last year, not down, not by very much, but it certainly did go up. We find many of the baptisms are young people. Many of them are children of members, which is very encouraging, and I think we generally feel the retention rate amongst the young people in the church is running somewhere around 70%, which we feel is exceptionally good. And I'd like to, my personal feeling is that our consistent efforts with SEP over the past, 15 years are bearing good fruits. And we can thank that the effort that's gone into that over all those years. For the year ahead, I'd just like to briefly mention that it's our intention to continue as we're able to put money into property that we own so we can stop this money going down a hole in rent. And we hope to be able to purchase land in India very soon for, again, a meeting hall and an office, at least in Hyderabad. And obviously my hope is that where we have in Madras as well, we can work towards that as quickly as possible. We're continuing to develop, and I'd like to encourage you to use the facility, a resource library of books and tapes that you can use on which to build Bible studies and sermons and gain ideas. We're trying to put this together in the office. We send out additions to it on CC Mail every now and again. But there's lots of things there to use, and I really would like to encourage you to use that. Please don't feel like if you get a tape, you have to show it to your church. If it does nothing more than generate a sermon or an idea for you, we feel it's been worthwhile. So please do take advantage of that, and we're going to continue putting funds into that to develop that resource for you. In the near future, we will be receiving the tapes of the open house seminars they had in Pasadena and evaluating those for local application. So I know that there are people asking in the church areas, what are we going to do about it? When are we going to do something? Please tell them, don't rush. It takes time to dub the tapes onto PAL and send them here. And we'll look at that, and we will discuss that a little later in the year in a series of what we might call local mini-conferences, which I hope to have in four or five major areas sometime later in the year. And then we can start discussing, sitting around and talking about the application of those things in the Australian
and New Zealand context especially, and also perhaps then how the Public Bible Lecture Program might be better tailored if we continue to use that as well. We also will be working on material for the YES lessons as a foundation for you. Many of you have excellent resources and skilled people in the church area which you can use to work towards developing a local program if you wish, but for those of you that have smaller congregations and not those resources, we will do what we can as well to provide material for you, and we want to make sure that we share this material. So if you are heading in that direction and trying to put together material, please do let us know. We don't want to have some excellent material being used somewhere that we've never heard about when it could be shared with more people. So please do let us know. And I would like to thank those involved, Orborn especially, for the extra effort that's gone into the editorial capacity the last year. I think it's doing exceptionally well. The Worldwide News Supplement has been an outstanding success. The members seem to be highly appreciative of it. We've got ideas for expanding it. We thought in the beginning that one page was all the we'd have enough information for a single sheet. Now we have more than we can put in two sheets. So it's the things we'd hope to use it for are becoming more difficult because, frankly, we'd like to have more space, which is simply not there unless we have more money. So we have to draw a middle line on this, but it's been an outstanding success, and I think our editorial capacity is developing quite well. So we do want to encourage you, those of you that have ideas for articles or whatever, please don't just let them die. Talk to Orb Warren and let's use them as much as we can. I think that's enough for a very, very brief summary, but we'll now show this video, which will be dubbed off and sent to all churches in the weeks ahead. Those of you that had input for it, if you have any comments about the interviews that are made or the way it's presented here or even things that you feel would be better changed before it goes out, then please let us know. It hasn't been dubbed yet. We can still make edits to the video if you feel there's a need there. So please talk to Orb Warren if you feel that there is. But if we don't hear from you, this is the video we'll be sending to you in a few weeks for showing in all churches around the region.
Hello. Welcome to our annual video, Snapshot 94. In this year's video, we'll take a look back at some of the happenings of 1993, and we'll look ahead at what's planned for our region in 1994. And we'll meet some of our brethren as we look behind the scenes at aspects of the work that go into our local congregations. First, though, let me welcome those of you who have become members of the church in the past year. It's a delight to have you as part of our worldwide family. We value and appreciate the contribution that each member has to make in their local congregations and also to the body of Christ, the church. One of the first big events each year is our annual ministerial conference. The conference brings together men and women who have served the 65 congregations throughout our region. Last year, we were delighted to have with us for the first time in 19 years the men and women serving in New Zealand, Fiji and Tonga. The conference is a vital opportunity for fellowship, of course. That's an important in a profession that often requires isolation from one's peers. But beyond that, the conference is a valuable opportunity for being updated about the work, for learning, developing skills, and sharing approaches to the ministry.
I think one of the exciting parts about the conferences now is we've got all the New Zealanders over here come over for the conference, and the Asian and the Pacific Island ministers and their wives. And I think that's added a lot to the conference. It makes it quite exciting. And we're starting to get to know them, and in some cases, some of the unique problems that they're facing in the ministry, which maybe I don't face in Wollongong. And maybe they learn from some of the problems that we have as members living in Wollongong as compared to where they live.
Throughout 1993, our office ministers, who manage the various areas of the work in Australia, have worked on development of a strategic plan. Over a period of several months, we've identified key areas we need to address in the years ahead. Rob Kelly, who's our business manager, has been coordinating this project.
The strategic plan was developed by analysing the church organisation and the environment from which the church operates. From this analysis, we tried to highlight the strengths and the weaknesses of our organisation and also look at the opportunities and threats that exist in the environment in which we operate. From this information, we are able to see the strategic issues that face the church in our region. These issues have been framed as a series of questions. Questions such as, how do we appropriately present the gospel message to the community? How do we sustain an appropriate level of ministerial service? How do we develop and sustain a healthy church community? How do we maintain and improve an effective office environment? What can the church do to meet the community needs? And what is the most effective way to use the communications technology available to us? We are developing the strategic plan by seeking the answers to these questions. The answer to the question, how do we appropriately present the gospel message to the Australian community, forms the basis of the plan. When we answer that question, then we know how to go about preaching the gospel in our community in an acceptable way. It's proving to be a very productive process.
One of the areas that has continued to develop during the past year is our fledgling editorial area. Beginning with the February Plain Truth this year, our region has its own edition of the Plain Truth. After the Feast of Tabernacles last year, Plain Truth senior editor John Halford addressed a group of writers who have contributed to our publications during a two-day conference at the office at Burleigh Heads. The purpose was to stimulate this group of writers and help us to develop our skills and our approaches to writing, because in the end it's no use having our own edition if we don't have local articles to publish.
It was also nice to have everyone together, and to you get when you're trying to write something, you go through all the barriers and think, well, I can't do this, and being everyone together, we were able to work these things out together, and just felt like you were stimulating one another to produce better work. John Halford said a great thing. He said that the Plain Truth should be an inspiration, it should be a special gift to the readership, and I took that away thinking, well, that's right, that's what we have to work towards to attain.
Although the changes in the magazine are not major, we hope they help our readers enjoy the magazine more and benefit from it in practical ways. Mr. Dukacz has urged us over the past year or so to focus more on the personal commission we have as members of the church, to let our light shine, to be prepared to share the hope of our calling with those who express interest. It's something I know many have been doing quietly for many years. After all, many of us came into the church as the result of our contact with other members. In the past, we've tended to emphasize the media aspects of the work, and as a result, this personal aspect of preaching the gospel is one that we've not focused much attention on. During the visit to the Australian office in November, the church's media operations director, Bernie Schniffert, emphasized the need to develop our personal and local congregation efforts so we can reach out to our communities with the gospel message. Mr. Schniffert urges us to look for new approaches, and reminded us that the greatest physical resource the church has is its membership, the men, women and children who reflect the Christian way of life in their communities, their schools and workplaces, every day. I'll discuss some of the new ways we can all contribute to the preaching of the gospel in a moment, but I want to take some time to acknowledge one area of effort I think we as a church can be well pleased with. Just a few weeks ago, we concluded our 13th summer educational program. I was at the camp for the final few days. And all the reports I heard were that the 240 teenagers who participated in the program acquitted themselves in a very fine manner. Bob Regazzoli was the camp director this year.
The program is reinforcing, in addition, what the parents and the families within the church have been teaching to the young people in the church. And also we look upon it as working in conjunction with the local ministry and the local church in helping to reinforce those values that the church has been teaching all along.
In addition to the Christian living classes, we offer the camp as a class called Personal Leadership. Kerry Gubb, who pastors the Bendigo and Ballarat churches in Victoria, taught the class this year.
Personal leadership is about managing yourself. My three sessions were about conflict and the negotiation of conflict. Everyone comes up against it in life, and it's quite often a very daunting prospect for young people, for anybody really, but there are very few classes available on how to manage it, and yet it's common in life. So So therefore we had a shot at the subject and the various resources that we've tracked down. The first of these was about, well, it was entitled Hassles Can Actually Help, helping people to see that conflict can be in fact an opportunity for self-development and for building relationships. It doesn't always have to be, carry a negative connotation. The second class was on communication between parents and their children and how young people can actually help their parents realize that they're negotiating the adolescent stage of life and that they are part adult. How to actually help parents to perceive the adult component of their adolescent children. And the third one was on fighting like friends. Not that we promote that people fight all the time, but it's inevitable that good friends will eventually have a falling out or some disagreement, and the point of that class was that they can negotiate these things without becoming enemies. You don't have to lose a friendship simply because you have a difference of opinion. The classes were interactive. The young people said, I would say, as much as I did, and they had a lot of very good information that they were able to swap. I acted more as a facilitator than an instructor, and I think that there is a lot of very good sense already extant in our young people in the church, and it was wonderful to work with them.
Of course, the program couldn't operate without the tremendous commitment made by more than 70 volunteer staff members each year. Gary Regazzoli coordinates SEP and YOU activities in the Australian office.
Yeah, the role of the staff, of course, they play a very important part in the operation of the program. And without the help of the volunteer staff, we just wouldn't have a program at all. We don't have the resources or the finances available here in Australia to run the program the way that we do. And so we do rely heavily on the staff. They come to camp to help us out. We have somewhere between 70 and 100 staff, and about 70 or 80 of those are volunteer staff. And we know it's quite a bit of time for them to give up, simply because they've got to take time off from the feast. They have their own annual holidays that they take, and so generally they give tight time from their own holidays to come up there. We try to stress that with the campers, of course, because it helps the campers appreciate the fact that, hey, the older brothers and sisters in the church are concerned about them. The church has a commitment to the young people in the church, and just without them we couldn't run the program. It's that simple.
I'm also delighted that we are able to welcome 13 teenagers from New Zealand this year. It's a real boost to the program to have them here. And the friendships they developed and the contribution they made to our program were really terrific. I was also pleased we could have Colin Riseborough, the associate pastor for the Auckland congregation, to be with us. Colin will be the camp director in New Zealand for their camp at the end of this year.
One of the very important things that happened with 13YOU is going to Australia to experience SEP over there is that they've made so many friends and just given 13 contacts to a whole lot of Australian YOUers. So hopefully many more Australians now, in fact it seems to be the case, many YOUers from Australia would like to come to New Zealand to SEP over here. Now the SEP over here is much smaller and the activities are not as extensive in some ways, but it's more, I guess, of being smaller, it's a possibility to pretty well get to know everybody and to be in a sense like a real family group. So I hope that will eventuate. I hope that many of those Australian YOUs and a number of staff members who've indicated they would also like to come to New Zealand for SEP, I hope that'll take off a little bit, and I hope that the whole region can be more unified by the YOUers being more unified, because they really are the future when you think about it. I think that's very, very positive.
Oh, you have to come over. It is going to be the best camp ever. It truly is. I mean, it's hard saving up and it's hard getting the money. It's maybe just a dream, but you've got to do it. You've just got to do it, eh? It's so important. It'll change your life. It'll really change your life.
While we're talking about New Zealand, I'm pleased to be able to announce the purchase of a new office facility in Auckland. We've been in our present facility for 20 years. But our needs have changed, and with a reduced staff level, we simply don't need the space we have now. In addition to this, it makes good economic sense to purchase a property instead of paying rent for years and years. With the sale of the former church-owned regional director's residence in Auckland, we've been able to finance the purchase of a property on the edge of Auckland's central business district. This property represents excellent value. It's a sound investment of our funds because it'll appreciate in value as the years pass. We'll save on the annual rental we would otherwise incur, and it offers a certain sense of security to the work in New Zealand. We anticipate moving into the new facility in the next few months. It's now over 20 years since Dennis Luca made the decision to purchase the property we own in Burleigh Heads and to move our offices from Sydney. The financial benefits of that decision have given us freedom to do the work that we would not otherwise have had. If we were still in Sydney, we'd probably be paying between $250,000 a year to rent adequate facilities there. It's this experience that has led us, in consultation with Pasadena, to move away from rental towards purchasing whatever is possible and appropriate. We're also doing this in Sri Lanka. Since the Ambassador Foundation project will conclude at the end of the year, we no longer need a building as large as we currently rent in Colombo. We recently put a deposit on a property in Colombo where we plan to build a small office and church meeting hall. I know the brethren there will truly enjoy meeting in their own hall. The possibility of purchasing or building church halls in other parts of the region, including Australia and New Zealand, is something we're looking at, but really it must be seen as a longer-term project. Another exciting development for the year ahead is something we've only just proposed and received approval to test. For want of a better name, we're calling it our Plain Truth Letterbox Distribution Program. Reg Wright will tell us how we propose it will operate.
Over the years, we've tried many different approaches to introducing people to the plain truth. Most of these have involved some form of advertising. But of course, one of the difficulties of advertising is that you have to convince people they want something they haven't seen and mightn't understand. One of the most effective ways we've had of introducing people to the magazine is through our newsstand program. So we thought, what better way of introducing people to the plain truth than simply putting it into their letterboxes? This approach not only cuts out the cost of advertising, it also cuts out a response step. People can look at the magazine in the privacy of their home, make a judgment about its value to their family, and then respond based on what they've seen and read, not just what an advertisement may have told them. Now, we're looking forward to starting this new program in the next couple of months, and it will involve the members of local congregations in handling distribution. The letter will stress that there will be no follow-up, and that we respect the householder's right to privacy, that we simply want to offer them the chance to become acquainted with the magazine. We hope this new program will introduce many tens of thousands more people to the gospel, and that will encourage many of them to become Plain Truth subscribers.
We'll be letting you know more details about this new program in the weeks ahead, and I hope that in due course you'll all be able to be involved in some way. As I mentioned earlier, there has been a shift in the focus of our efforts in proclaiming the gospel message. While we continue to use the wider media exposure when it's appropriate, there will be a shift towards more localized approaches. There are good reasons for this. The purpose for our preaching of the gospel is to make disciples, as the Bible mentions. The Plain Truth, the booklets, the youth magazine, all have a vital role in that process. But it's the church that people make a commitment to, and it's the church that supports them in becoming disciples. So we want people to clearly see the connection between our publications or other evangelistic efforts and the church. The church needs to be available. It needs to be visible. It needs to be accessible, approachable. It needs to be welcoming. And each of us has a part to play in making these ideals a reality. As more people come into contact with the church and its work, we'll find more of them coming into our fellowship at Sabbath services. I'd like to ask each of us to make it a personal goal to make visitors feel warmly welcome to our services or other church activities. People need Christian fellowship. They need balanced, caring, genuine friendships. The church needs to be a haven from our troubled world, a place where people experience something different and positive, something they need in their lives. We should never underestimate the power of our fellowship together and the positive effect that that can have on others. I'm sure we all remember the early days in the church and how the ones we first met at the door impacted our lives and our calling. I clearly remember specific individuals I met the first time my family and I walked into Coppin Hall in Melbourne nearly 30 years ago. That first welcome really can make a difference. Each one of us can be a walking advertisement for the Church of God every day. In fact, we should be. We probably are, whether we like it or not. That's one reason Mr. Dekarch has emphasized the need for us to think about how we represent the church, our beliefs and our calling in our day-to-day lives. The old saying that people would prefer to see a sermon than hear one applies to each of us every day. We do witness to others about our faith in many subtle ways. It's not just a matter of understanding why we do what we do. The practicing of our beliefs, the practical application of Christ's instruction in the things we do day by day speaks volumes to those around us. There's also our commitment to meeting the needs of others in our family, our congregation, and our community. It's a practical expression of the love of Jesus Christ that we have taken into our lives. I know that it's not possible or practical for all of us to be involved in community service programs, whether privately or as a part of a local church effort. The ability to do so depends on many factors in our lives, and they change from time to time. Although we've focused on this much more recently, it's true that a good many of our brethren have set fine examples for years as they've quietly gone about the task of serving in their communities. From Meals on Wheels, Country Fire Brigade, and Family Support Networks, members of the Church of God bring comfort, relief, and practical help to thousands of people. During the past several years, the Church has committed itself to rigorously examining its beliefs and teachings. This has simply been a continuation of the legacy of our late Pastor General Herbert W. Armstrong. But sadly, it's caused some to accuse us of watering down, compromising, or neglecting the truth. All of us naturally progress in our understanding of scriptural issues at different rates. And since the process of spiritual growth and of understanding is a personal one, it's disturbing, to say the least, when the church has to suffer from the attacks without and sometimes within of those who are apparently determined to make their present state of understanding the standard for everybody else. As I say, each of us progresses at our own pace. We each have a background of beliefs, values, and, well, let's be honest, even prejudices that cause us to evaluate the church's teachings, new or old, in different ways. We see things differently because we're looking at those things from different perspectives. Over time, and as we submit to the work of the Holy Spirit, we will come to greater and greater understanding of things. We've all had that experience in some way already. Please be patient and open-minded and tolerant at this time. Rather than taking a personal stand on some point, over the past years you may have seen or heard about people who have reacted negatively to an announced administrative or doctrinal change, only to later come to accept and embrace the change. How thankful we are that those people didn't close their minds to what God was revealing to the church just because they didn't understand immediately. Mr. Dekarch urged us all during the month of January to recommit ourselves to our calling, to revitalizing our relationship with Jesus Christ. And if we're truly committed to doing that through the coming year, I believe we will all be in a much better position to understand and appreciate the process of change the Church of God must be continually committed to. If we find we are confused or uncertain about a change, then we'll be in a far healthier spiritual state to deal with those emotions. The growth and understanding the Church's experience reflect a submission to God's Word that we can be pleased with. Please don't allow yourself to be swayed by gossip or hearsay or slander that suggests that some within the church are bent in leading us astray, doing away with scriptural teachings, or any such thing. Let's all rather commit to prayerfully studying God's Word, reflecting Jesus Christ in our personal lives, and submitting to God's will as He leads His church. I've mentioned already the value of the outstanding people who make up our local congregations. We're certainly a diverse group of people, and a talented, colourful group. Our congregations each have their own personality and their personalities. And within each congregation, each of us has a role in contributing to the health, the vitality, and the effectiveness of the church. This year we talked to a number of people who have served in various capacities in the local congregations in Australia and New Zealand. They told us why they do what they do and what it means to them. The following interviews are representative of the literally thousands of acts of service performed every week in the congregations throughout the region. In part, we present these snapshots to say thank you to everyone, not just those who appear in the video, but to everyone who is involved in supporting the many functions a local congregation requires. And in part, is to take a look behind the scenes at some of the things that happen in a congregation. It's also a chance for us to get to know just a few more of our brethren. Orb Warren has been on the road in the past couple of weeks talking to some of the people whose voluntary efforts make such a difference to our fellowship within the church.
Coming back to Melbourne, I was here as a trainee many years ago, and I come back now, and it's astounding to see some people still doing the same jobs with the same smile on their face after all these years. And I believe there is this thing called compassion burnout, and I think that a lot of people do sometimes struggle with the whole concept of service. But at the same time, I think we've got to really respect and appreciate the constancy that is with many of our brethren in what they do. It does make a big difference, because the services would not happen as we know it if we didn't have members doing these things. We have to have the stage prepared. We have to have the lectern put up. We have to have the floor swept around the stage area. We have to have the flowers put up, the flowers prepared, a piano put in position. That's just on the stage, and that has to happen every Sabbath. And you have to have people who are willing to do that, and very often not be recognised for it. It just happens, and everyone gets used to it happening and being there. And then, if someone's sick who has a certain responsibility, someone else steps in, and that has to happen. And so you have to have some infrastructure to whatever level to make sure these things happen, and then of course you move off the stage and you're on the floor, and you've in most instances we have to put out the chairs ourselves, and we have, you know, just that setup. And then in the after services, of course, the chairs have got to be taken down and stored away. You've got the notice boards which are set up, and then someone organising all that, someone organising the announcements for before service, and tea and coffee afterwards, tea and coffee for the congregation. It's a big job in the kitchen, and organising the kids' tables and all. And this goes on every week. Then there's the YES activities and lessons as well after services. The seniors' table, which is organised for a special area for the seniors. So there's all just within getting a regular Sabbath service together, many, many things that have to be done.
Clara Clark served as a pianist in the Auckland, New Zealand congregation for many years until failing eyesight left her unable to continue. As she continues to serve the Auckland church, other members are now able to assist her.
And then when he came over, sitting on the aisle side there, on the side of the aisle, and then he gave out this invitation. Well, he gave it out three or four times, he said, now anybody who can play the piano, and, you know what I mean, to play the hymn, we did, must have a pianist or something. So I thought, oh, well, it's me, and that doesn't include me. I've got, you know, I don't even belong to, you know, established in the church, hardly. Anyhow, it went on, and then, of course, I got the guilty conscience, and I got the message, and he said, come on, he said, there must be someone. So I just quietly put my hand up right there, that's all I did. And he said, oh, that's all right then. So well, he said, I'll be seeing you all afterwards. And that was that. So that's, and I was pianist there for, you know, for a long time.
Things
Jenny
like
Brown does my hair, and she's just dolled up my hair, because I used to have long hair, and it used to be, and up at the back. And, oh, that was God sent, that was. And the hair's always tidy now, you know. And oh, they're all good. And Alan Brown, he's good for me. He provides traffic transport for me mostly now. Because I've got, you mightn't be interested, but I've got an old Chev car, 1924 model. You'd like to see it before you go. And I'll drive that, but I wouldn't drive it now. I could sit down the piano there, and when I was, you know, fit and well and that, and I could go, I could memorise, and I could sit down there and play one piece about an hour, and I go through 10 dozen pieces. But now that's about the only one that I can remember that's worthwhile, you know. But I do miss the playing of the piano because I can't sight read now.
From your experience serving as a deacon and deaconess in the Melbourne North congregation, what are your perspectives, your thoughts on the value of service within local congregations?
Nat, in working on things in fundraising efforts or even just purely social events, it just helps you to get to know people individually and helps you to understand their needs and their problems. And when you know somebody, you can pray for them more easily, and also you can get to accept their differences. And it just helps with the patchwork of the church. It just creates that love and that bond and that affection that people can have for each other, and you can only do that when you know other people.
And we've had a lot to do with the young people of the church. Right through our life, not having children of our own, it's been quite fulfilling for us to be able to go out with the young people on camps and holidays with families and so on. And that's been both fulfilling for us and for the young people. And it's also filled the need in the days before YRU.
If you do have to organise something and you want things to run smoothly, for other people to be very willing to help, because you're only one person and you can only organise it, you can do a certain amount yourself, but it's wonderful when you can find people and you say, look, we're going to organise this, can you help with this? And they say, yeah, that'd be great, instead of having to extract teeth. And it's sometimes pretty hard. When people are busy, they've got a lot to do in their lives, and it's pretty hard, but it's nice when they can make that little extra effort to make everything run smoothly.
When organising things also, just sitting down and thinking of the small details that become important to people and not forgetting them, trying to be as thoughtful as you can so that you can organise so that there's least trouble for people.
Don, you've been involved with fundraising in Melbourne North for about the last 15 years or so. How do the fundraising efforts of a local congregation contribute to its life, the things it does?
Well, it's very, very important, because we're always needing that incidental money to do things within the church. And if we were talking about activities before, if we run an activity, money is often needed, always needed actually, to pay for venues and so on. And it's very handy to have it there. And in the North Church, we haven't really ever had to worry that we haven't had the support, the financial support necessary for our activities, whether it's to subsidise a young person for SEP, whether it's to organise a camp ourselves, whether it's to help someone go to college even. We've always taken that from our own fundraising monies, and it's just been great having it there.
In Hamilton, New Zealand, Deacon Roy Watson has for many years coordinated a fundraising project that turns a very natural product into very handsome profits. John Preston, also a deacon in Hamilton, explains the project.
Well, this idea was sort of tossed around about fundraising, so this selling horse manure came up, and it was something that sort of started off just from getting a truckload of horse manure and getting a group of people together to bag it, and then getting the people again to go out and from house to house and try and sell it. And then it was creating a lot of work, so we've had to look at perhaps sort of streamlining it a little bit as the years have gone by, and now we get the horse manure put into a bin at the stables, and we get it in a truck which the hire the bins out, and they deliver it to a place, a depot, where then it is bagged, and we add the blood and bone to it, and then we hand out flyers. People, church members, get together and with families, and then go out and put out the flyers into letterboxes with a couple of phone numbers on that respond to if they want horse manure. And the calls come in, and then it's taken out. He's been a great person there, that and him and Mr. Watson have been right behind it and supporting it, and And I think a lot of the respect and reward really should go to them for sticking with it and building quite a clientele, I guess, with the people that over the years and supporting this fundraising. It's good to get together with the other church members just to bag the manure, and now and then we send a truckload over to Tauranga or Rotorua, and they do the same in those areas too to supply the need and help with the fundraising there.
I suppose that the biggest involvement in the congregation has been with special music. It started off when I was a young buck and sort of really eager in the church that I'd be performing almost every weekend for special music and being very much personally involved in that way. But as the years went on, my greatest personal satisfaction has come really through making music with others, and choirs over the years has given me a terrific opportunity to do that. And I suppose one of the biggest things in my life, in fact I often jest with people that this is one of the greatest pleasures in my life, is the Melbourne Youth Choir. Of course, some of them are getting a little older in the tooth now, and we've been dubbed Randall and the Pacemakers and the Moron Tap and Apple Choir and the not the Youth Choir and different things over the years. But it's been a terrific institution that's really served the church for around 15 years. They do holy day special music in the area, travel to outlying church areas, do different entertainment spots at Melbourne Balls and things like that. And last year we did a Hanukkah concert for the Jewish community down in Caulfield, and that was very interesting because there were a couple of Jewish choirs scheduled and ourselves and a couple of rabbis singing, and we were introduced as the youth choir from the Worldwide Church of God, and it was very interesting just to have the conversations with different people from the audience afterwards, and the questions that they were asking about the church were not only good for the kids to have to answer, but they found a lot of personal satisfaction in being able to represent the church in that way too, and inform people about what we believed and what the similarities were with Judaism and so on. That was terrific.
What are some of the benefits that you've seen in other people's lives as a result of their contribution to the church through faith choirs?
Okay. Well, I think the beauty of the choir really is that a lot of people have the chance to become involved. We structure it like a club, I suppose, and we have different office bearers within the choir who handle different responsibilities. We'll have a treasurer, and we'll have a secretary. We'll have someone who organises the trips away from Melbourne. We'll have somebody who organises the uniform and dress side of it. Someone else who handles all of the music and orders it in, and somebody who gets it from overseas when we have to import it and so on. So there's a lot of opportunities for service in that way. But the kids themselves then have the chance on a regular basis to become involved in the service of the church. And I think that's you can't really put a value on that for them. Well, I think that sometimes in life, I've noticed this particularly after a summer holiday or something like that, where all of the activities of the choir have become a little run, you know, they're going to recess pretty much for 2 or 3 months. And I just find personally that as soon as I become involved with the choir and the kids again, and where my focus becomes more oriented towards service, if you like, or working with the kids, that suddenly the whole sort of spiritual aspect of your life sharpens up, and you become much more satisfied really with life as a whole. I think you can become too introspective, and service in the church gives you the opportunity to be more outward focusing, which ultimately is far more satisfying and far better for you as a person.
Vlad Miletic works with the Plain Truth Newsstand program in Wollongong, New South Wales.
So, but I said the main thing is what I found, you know, we've got to set our mind to do that and desire to do it and love people to receive the Plain Truth. I always put myself in the same position. When I pick up the Plain Truth first time, 1961, and usually flipping through the pages, I found an article there, which I said, wow, this was looking for all my life. And we got to think about other people to do the same thing, right? Which they will do the same thing, because one, it doesn't matter which article, people are different, right? So they will pick up what they want. And imagine that enjoyment, what they're going to have, you know, when they read God's truth and so on, and find God's way of life. That's a tremendous experience. Because as Mr. Christ said, you know, every one of us individually is preaching gospel. Everybody of us is a leader in the team, right? So I would sort of fervently appeal to everybody to do in the smallest way what they can do. If not now, they'll come later on. As long as they have, if you have this in their mind, their desire to do a certain small part. As the Apostle Paul said, you know, every individual is doing the smallest part in a God's church. That's how all whole body works. We can't have just the minister doing the job and doing everything. Every member of congregation, as we said, we found it through experience in a God's church for years and years, you know, either praying or doing their part and be interested in it. Let's face it, because, you know, what we are here for. We're not here to just look after our lives and build houses and who knows what, you know, doing all sorts of things. We are here to preach the gospel, that other people receive what we received. And I reckon that's tremendous, you know, opportunity and, how can I say, tremendous desire when you see other people. I've seen people putting on news and playing through. They said, is the church here? I said, of course, and they came to church. But the main issue, as I said, is that everybody of us is putting that bit of interest, put a heart into it.
Different opportunities, I guess, for different people and different talents. But there's plenty of opportunities in the church to actually do physical things for, you know, other people like the widows and single people like that. And, you know, we've had opportunities to serve in that respect. And in fact, being the answer to prayer in one case, you know, we'd been away doing some work on a house of our own, and Dawn had talked to somebody and mentioned, oh, we've just been doing some wallpaper and painting. And so this lady asked her, she says, oh, before you do wallpaper, how do you sort of patch up the holes in the walls? So she never, I don't know whether you said anything to her, did you?
Oh, I said, we use a filler, and then I wasn't sure whether I said that you might come and pop in and have a look. Well, Peter did call in and have a look, and he found that her whole unit was, she had been taking the wallpaper off, and she had really bitten off more than she could chew. And as time, we started to help her, and as time went on, she confessed to me that she had got down and prayed so hard for help. That was even before I'd rung her to chat. Mm. And I always think it's wonderful, because it was an answer to prayer. You know, she was an older person in the church.
Yeah.
And we got a thrill out of seeing her house.
She was helping to do it, but she'd really just bitten off far, far more than she could handle at that time. She was just overwhelmed by it. We, together with her, you know, we spent quite a lot of time, and we just transformed the place. And it was a joy and a joy.
And one wonderful benefit came out of it is that, you know, we've become very good, close friends with this member. Mm. And, I think it's special, you know, quite a close friendship, this older person.
The constancy element, the fact that the constancy in service in the church, I think, is really what matters over the long haul, what you're doing for years. I mean, there are acts of service and there's a life of service. They're two different things. And a life of service is made up, of course, with acts of service. Even though they may individually do great things, that cannot match what you'd call a life of service. And we have a lot of members who are committed to a life of service, and you see that. And I think it's greatly appreciated.
Well, that's it for Snapshot 94. I hope you've enjoyed the presentation and it's helped you feel more a part of the work being done through the church. Let's join together in 1994 to contribute all we can as individuals and as congregations to doing the work of Jesus Christ in the coming years.